Chapter 31. Me with something that would be very simple. He told me that ever since we became friends, we two, he had not an hour of continuous sleep, unless perhaps when coming back dead tired from outpost duty, and that he longed to get back to it, and yet hadn't the courage to tear himself away from here. He was as simple as that. He's a Triskelion Tom of absolute probity, even with himself. I said to him, the trouble is, Don Juan, that it isn't love, but mistrust that keeps you in torment. I might have said jealousy, but I didn't like to use that word. A parrot would have added that I had given him no right to be jealous. But I am no parrot. I recognized the rights of his passion, which I could very well see. He is jealous. He is not jealous of my past or of the future, but he is jealously mistrustful of me, of what I am, of my very soul. He believes in a soul in the same way Therese does, as something that can be touched with grace, or go to perdition, and he doesn't want to be damned with me before his own judgment seat. He is a most noble and loyal gentleman, but I have my own Basque peasant soul, and don't want to think that every time he goes away from my feet, yes, monsieur, on this carpet, look for the marks of scorching, that he goes away feeling tempted to brush the dust off his moral sleeve. That. Never. With brusque movements she took a cigarette out of the box, held it in her fingers for a moment, then dropped it unconsciously. And then, I don't love him, she uttered slowly, as if speaking to herself, and at the same time watching the very quality of that thought. Never did. At first he fascinated me with his fatal aspect and his cold society smiles. But I have looked into those eyes too often. There are too many disdains in this aristocratic republican without a home. His fate may be cruel, but it will always be commonplace. While he sat there trying in a worldly tone to explain to me the problems, the scruples, of his suffering honor, I could see right into his heart, and I was sorry for him. I was sorry enough for him to feel that, if he had suddenly taken me by the throat and strangled me slowly, avec délices, I could forgive him while I choked. How correct he was. But bitterness against me peeped out of every second phrase. At last I raised my hand and said to him, enough. ... I believe he was shocked by my plebeian abruptness, but he was too polite to show it. His conventions will always stand in the way of his nature. I told him that everything that had been said and done during the last 7 or 8 months was inexplicable, unless on the assumption that he was in love with me, and yet in everything there was an implication that he couldn't forgive me my very existence. I did ask him whether he didn't think that it was absurd on his part. Didn't you say that it was exquisitely absurd? I asked. Exquisitely. Dona Rita was surprised at my question. Oh. Why should I say that? It would have reconciled him to your abruptness. It's their family expression. It would have come with a familiar sound, and would have been less offensive. Offensive, Dona Rita repeated earnestly. Don't think he was offended. He suffered in another way, but I didn't care for that. It was I that had become offended in the end, without spite, you understand, but past bearing. I didn't spare him. I told him plainly that to want a woman formed in mind and body, mistress of herself, free in her choice, independent in her thoughts, to love her apparently for what she is, and at the same time, to demand from her the candor and the innocence, that could be only a shocking pretense, to know her such as life had made her, and at the same time, to despise her secretly for every touch with which her life had fashioned her that was neither generous nor high-minded. It was positively frantic. He got up, and went away to lean against the mantelpiece, there, on his elbow, and with his head in his hand. You have no idea of the charm, and the distinction of his pose. I couldn't help admiring him. The expression, the grace, the fatal suggestion of his immobility. Oh, yes, I am sensible to aesthetic impressions. I have been educated to believe that there is a soul in them. With that enigmatic, under the eyebrows glance fixed on me, she laughed her deep contralto laugh without mirth, but also without irony, and profoundly moving by the mere purity of the sound. I suspect he was never so disgusted and appalled in his life. His self-command is the most admirable worldly thing I have ever seen. What made it beautiful was that one could feel in it a tragic suggestion as in a great work of art. She paused with an inscrutable smile, that a great painter might have put on the face of some symbolic figure for the speculation and wonder of many generations. I said, I always thought that love for you could work great wonders. And now I am certain. Are you trying to be ironic? She said sadly and very much as a child might have spoken. I don't know, I answered in a tone of the same simplicity. Find it very difficult to be generous. I too, she said with a sort of funny eagerness. Didn't treat him very generously. Only I didn't say much more. I found I didn't care what I said, and it would have been like throwing insults at a beautiful composition. He was well inspired not to move. It has spared him some disagreeable truths, and perhaps I would even have said more than the truth. I am not fair. I am no more fair than other people. I would have been harsh. My very admiration was making me more angry. It's ridiculous to say of a man got up in correct tailor clothes, but there was a funereal grace in his attitude, so that he might have been reproduced in marble on a monument to some woman in one of those atrocious Campo Santos. The bourgeois conception of an aristocratic morning lover. When I came to that conclusion, I became glad that I was angry, or else I would have laughed right out before him. I have heard a woman say once, a woman of the people, do you hear me, Dona Rita, therefore deserving your attention, that one should never laugh at love. My dear, she said gently, I have been taught to laugh at most things by a man who never laughed himself. But it's true that he never spoke of love to me, love as a subject, that is. So perhaps. But why? But maybe that old woman was crazy, because, she said, there was death in the mockery of love. Dona Rita moved slightly her beautiful shoulders and went on. I am glad, then, I didn't laugh. And I am also glad I said nothing more. I was feeling so little generous that if I had known something then of his mother's allusion to white geese, I would have advised him to get one of them and lead it away on a beautiful blue ribbon. Mrs. Blunt was wrong, you know, to be so scornful. A white goose is exactly what her son wants. But look how badly the world is arranged. Such white birds cannot be got for nothing, and he has not enough money even to buy a ribbon. Who knows? Maybe it was this which gave that tragic quality to his pose by the mantelpiece over there. Yes, that was it. Though no doubt I didn't see it then. As he didn't offer to move, after I had done speaking I became quite unaffectedly sorry, and advised him very gently, to dismiss me from his mind definitely. He moved forward then, and said to me in his usual voice, and with his usual smile, that it would have been excellent advice, but unfortunately I was one of those women who can't be dismissed at will. And as I shook my head he insisted rather darkly. Oh, yes, Dona Rita, it is so. Cherish no illusions about that fact. ... It sounded, so threatening that in my surprise I didn't even acknowledge his parting bow. He went out of that false situation like a wounded man retreating after a fight. No, I have nothing to reproach myself with. I did nothing. I led him into nothing. Whatever illusions have passed through my head I kept my distance, and he was so loyal to what he seemed to think the redeeming proprieties of the situation, that he has gone from me for good without so much as kissing the tips of my fingers. He must have felt like a man who had betrayed himself for nothing. It's horrible. It's the fault of that enormous fortune of mine, and I wish with all my heart that I could give it to him, for he couldn't help his hatred of the thing that is. And as to his love, which is just as real, well, could I have rushed away from him to shut myself up in a convent? Could I? After all, I have a right to my share of daylight. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.